they must prove the following four things. 1. The employer failed to render its workplace free of a hazard. 2. An employee was exposed to that hazard. 3. That hazard was causing or likely to cause death or serious physical harm. And 4. Feasible means exist to free the workplace of the hazard. Employees aren't off the hook either. Section 5B mandates they follow all safety standards. Both employers and employees must work together to maintain a safe work environment. Examples: think lifting above shoulder height repeatedly, or working without proper support. Stay proactive, monitor work areas, apply the four-part test, and you'll prevent those nasty citations and keep everyone safe. Need help? And more information? Contact Jim Pozel and the Safety Wars team to help you prevent workplace incidents, conduct safety audits and training. Contact the Safety Wars team at jim@safetywars.com or 845-269-5772. Visit us on the web at www.safetywars.com. Let's build a safer workplace together.
Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity in the highway to north, this is Safety Wars for Thursday, May 22nd, 2025. A lot's happened. I tell you what, we cannot continue to go on this way. Not good. Well, what do you mean, Jim? What do you mean? Terrorist attack today in D.C. Woke up to the news this morning. I should say I was announced while I was already up, since I'm up so early. But anyway, not good, my friends. Right? So what do we got here? News all over the place. We're going to be talking about not so much safety tonight, but a lot of the other stuff going on in the world, including the terrorist attack. So, buckle up, everybody. Buckle up. So, I've been having some audio issues lately. I hope we got those worked out. I mean, it's like I get halfway through the episode, and then audio cuts out. Right? I don't get it. So here we have man accused of killing Israeli embassy charged killing Israeli embassy staffers in D.C. charged with murder. The alleged shooter, 31-year-old, and I'm not going to mention his name, he's from Chicago, made his first appearance today in federal court. He did not enter a plea and will remain behind bars pending future court hearings. The next hearing is set for June 18th. The victims were Jan Leshinsky and Sarah Milgram, 30 years old and 26. Israel's foreign ministry said they both worked at the Israeli embassy and were about to be engaged, according to Yaisha Leiter, the Israel ambassador to the U.S. So the Justice Department charged this person with federal murder charges in the shooting last night outside of the Capitol Jewish Museum in Washington, D.C. At least one of the charges carries the possibility of the death penalty. The person is also charged with first-degree murder, murdering foreign officials, and using a firearm during a violent crime. And they got it on surveillance and everything else. Let's keep their both families in your prayers if you pray here. So, what else we got here? Got that. The person who did this said, "I did it for Gaza." Right? So who is this person? An alleged far left activist who murdered two Israelis. And this is from the Jerusalem Post. The man who killed two Israeli embassy staff members outside the Capitol Jewish Museum in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday night has been an active member of the Party for Socialism and Liberation, the PSL, a far-left Marxist pro-Palestinian group. The Chicago native held a red keffiyeh and chanted "Free, Free Palestine" as he was being taken into custody after shooting Sarah Lynn Milgram and her fiancé Yaron Lashinsky. According to a witness report, Rodriguez came into the museum looking visibly shaken. "We thought he was just in the street, and maybe he came into the building because he wanted somewhere to be safe," Katie Kalischer told NBC. She had attended an event at the Jewish Museum to listen to a panel on humanitarian aid in Gaza. Kalischer said that when she and several others tried to calm him down by talking to him, when he asked which museum they were inside of, she informed him it was the Jewish Museum. Referencing the shots heard, he then asked Kalischer, "Do you think that's why they did it?" She said that she was unsure, that it was unrelated. He pulls out his keffiyeh, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, and says, "I did it. I did it for Gaza, free, free Palestine." Again, this guy has a history and everything else. It's just shocking here that now this is going on here. Other news: House Republican shreds Trump's big, beautiful bill as Titanic-level debt bomb. Representative Tom Massey broke ranks to deliver a stark warning that President Donald Trump's big, beautiful bill was a time bomb and scathing Titanic-inspired takedown that, argued the policies, will send the U.S. full speed toward a fiscal iceberg. During the combative stretch of floor debate into the early hours of Thursday, House Democrats lambasted the legislation as a cynical giveaway to the ultra-wealthy that guts federal health and nutrition programs. Massey joined them in protest to offer what he called a dose of reality. The Kentucky Republican broke with the party to warn that the bill, despite promising tax relief, sets the country on a path to eye-watering debt and long-term economic instability. Massey flagged how Moody's downgraded the U.S. credit outlook, prompting higher interest rates on long-term government bonds. Let me point out here that we covered this several months ago here, that Congress has no intention of cutting spending here. Right, that's, no, we have to deal, when we talk about context, that's the context that we're dealing with here, is that nobody wants to cut spending. Nobody. We'll see how this shakes out by October 1st. My prediction, even though this passed in May 21st or 22nd, this is not going to be settled until the earliest September, third week of September. Yeah, they're going to be debating this back and forth. Sorry, folks, I don't want to be a pessimist here, but that's what we're looking at here. So what the question is, how does this impact you, and what are you going to do about it? Because that's the whole safety war here, right? That is the safety war. Well, what do you mean, Jim, that's the safety war? Part of the safety war is, how are you going to react? What are you going to do? What are you going to do to increase your capacity and your resilience here? Sit down with a qualified financial person. Figure it out. We're in for rocky times here. Some other stories here. Now, people, and here you go. I don't have the story here, but people are not, right? People are not spending money on things. So there's one article we have here that travel is for the rich. That's the headline. People are saying, you know what, these once in a lifetime, you only live once kind of expenses, are they really worth it? So staying local. We got, and even in my community there, people are talking about not going on as many vacations or taking like a scaled back vacation. Maybe go down to the Jersey Shore, like in that Billy Joel song, right? Allentown, not too far away from where I am. More traditional things. I tell you what, one of the cheaper vacations, is, especially if you have one in your neighborhood, is to go out to a national park. But we all know that those have been, you know, there's an issue going on with them here. Going on. Coin counting. Now, well, they've been talking about this since they changed the composition of the penny in the early 80s. I think it was 83 or 82. From copper to zinc. And even then, it has a little bit of copper in it still, but even then, it costs like more than a penny, from what I recall, to make a penny. So now we have an issue here. Grocery prices are about to undergo a dramatic change after the Treasury Department announced it will stop making pennies on Thursday. That means today, May 22nd, the change will remove an American stable coin for over two centuries, likely mean the end of 99-cent deals. The Treasury Department will phase out pennies starting immediately and will entirely end production by 2026. The agency outlined on Thursday, this will mean that there won't be enough of them left to be used in everyday transactions. It comes as an effort to save on the cost of producing them, the process of which has been criticized by pretty much everybody. Even though the penny is worth 1 cent, it costs 4 cents to make on its own, and in rising costs are making it less beneficial. I've been collecting, since the 1980s, people have been throwing them on the ground, and there's been a bucket of, pennies out there, right? It also has been revealed that, on average, Americans throw away up to $68 million in coins every year, left in plastic bins at airport security checkpoints, for example. Well, I tell you what, if you want to get rid of your pens, what you need to do is contact us here at Safety Wars, and we will take your coins. If you want to get rid of them, we'll take them. Believe me, I got two kids that are into rolling coins. Well, we'll do it. You go and you, give us a call, 845-269-5772, and send me a text message, that's what I prefer, and I will take all your coins. No need to fear. If you're in the metro New York City and Philadelphia area, I will come to your house and take your coins if it's worth my while. I guarantee it. So please send me your coins. So on roughly 3 million pennies produced last year in the U.S., the government lost an $85 million on them. Right. So now what do? Do you round them up? Do you just pay cashless? Because they're sending us up for a cashless thing. Prices, they're telling, now do you round up to the nearest 5 cents or down to the nearest 5 cents? I don't know. We'll figure this out. Things will adapt. Here you go. This is from Bankrate. We're just talking about this. The days of revenge travel are over. After years of being cooped up at home, travelers rush into the world with a vengeance, sparking a major travel boom from 2022 to 2024. But years of rising prices and a slew of new tariff threats have cast uncertainty over the economy. A summer vacation survey by Bankrate in March found that only 53% of Americans said that they plan to take a vacation this summer, about the same as last year, but a drop from 2023 when 63% plan to take vacation. Of those foregoing travel this year, 65% cited cost as the main factor. And of those opting to travel, almost a third say they plan to take on debt to do so. Right? But basically, people don't have the money. There's uncertainty out there. This is one of the impacts of that. Here's one from here, right? So Kim Jong-un's new warship capsizes at launch due to absolute carelessness. Well, I guess they're blaming the worker, blaming everybody else. Maybe there's something with the system here. North Korea has ambitions to modernize. This is from the Wall Street Journal. Its Soviet-era naval forces to better contend with the U.S. and South Korea. Right? North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's dream of modernizing his country's outdated naval fleet suffered a major setback after a much-touted warship crashed into the water after a botched exit from the dock. Kim, who witnessed the mishap unfold on a Wednesday launch event, and lambasted officials for their absolute carelessness, irresponsibility, and unscientific empiricism in causing the serious incident. North Korea's state media reported the 41-year-old dictator equated the gaffe to a criminal act. The unnamed 5,000-ton destroyer had been docked at a shipyard in Chongqing, a northeastern port city, as it was pushed sideways. I always wondered about it, launching the ship sideways, right? I think this happens more than we know. All over the place. As it was pushed sideways towards the water, the ship didn't move in parallel. Its hull got crushed, and its bow got stranded on the shipway, St. Mealy said. Citing satellite imagery of the shipyard, South Korean military said the destroyer lay on its side in the water. North Korean state media didn't publish images from the launch event or mention any injuries. The warship represents one of Kim's crown jewels in his push to upgrade North Korea's naval fleet. Much of the country's ships are from the Soviet era and pale in comparison to nuclear-powered submarines, warships, and vessels possessed by the U.S. and South Korea. Yeah, we're looking at it on the satellite photo. You know, yeah, it's on its side. It looks. Again, is your management like this? I mean, unfortunately, and I'm not saying this to be funny here, but these people are probably going to end up in jail or dead, and along with their families, and charge whoever gets blamed for this. Does your workplace act like that? Maybe they're not killing you for making a mistake, but, you know, maybe they're setting you up for failure. Maybe they're yelling and screaming at you. Maybe, perhaps, just perhaps, they are like our guy from, hold on, here you go. Perhaps they were like our dude here. And that is Safety Warrior with You Give Safety a Bad Name. Let's go to my first commercial break here, and we'll be right back to you.
Safety Wars is streaming now.
SafetyFM.com.
In a world where danger lurks in every corner, one man stands as a beacon of hope. Jim Posel, a veteran safety expert with over 3 decades of experience, now bringing his knowledge to you with Safety Wars. Engaging, informative, and always relevant. That's Safety Wars. Join the safety revolution with Safety Wars, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamer emers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Posel and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It's definitely, it will take some deep dives and some information that you might be interested in.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Posel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
Yes, Jessica, I am your father. Okay, let's switch things up a little bit. For our next one, here you go. We have... Okay, here we have, and if you're seeing this here, right? Yep, you are. So, what do we track here, right? This is from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and the U.S. Census Bureau and everything else that was released in the last day or so. So, these are what they're calling the Vintage 2024 U.S. Population Estimates. Now, this is an ongoing theme for us here. This is an ongoing discussion, right? So we have a very low growth rate here. And even last week, I could read a story from Hillary Clinton talking about the low birth rate. And her husband was talking about this when he was on the trail with Kamala Harris last October. This is an issue. This is why we have immigration and everything else here in this country, is to get people going into the country, right, to make up for I believe it's 1.2 birth rate here, and it really needs to be like 2.4, something like that. Every family having 2.4 children. And again, you cannot fight the economic consequences or the societal consequences of having a low birth rate. Just that you ain't going to do it. So here's the latest numbers. Total U.S. population for 2024 is over 340 million. Annual growth rate nearly 1.0. That's not sustainable. This is, like I said, just came out. I said, well, different about this 1.0. It's the fast, but on a positive note, it's the fastest growth since 2001. Net international migration is 84% of 3.3 million, right? Which is an increase. And a natural increase of births out number of deaths by approximately 519,000. This is what we're looking at here. Natural increase, 16%. And from immigration, 84% here. So that's basically coming from out of the country. Where were the areas of the biggest growth? We're talking here in the South, right? Our growth rate was 1.4%. Northeast, 1%. Midwest, 0.7%, and the West at about 1%. Now, Mike, I got it, right? Because out West, basically, it's the same thinking of the population out there. Very, very similar. I've been all over the country. But very, very similar philosophies and everything else. Down South, I don't know if that's from the higher birth rates from... population rates, because one, it's for closer to the southern border. I don't know if it's because of a lot of those states have restrictions on abortion that's causing this, or what have you. But basically it comes down to the population pyramid. You need more people on the bottom than on the top. We've talked about this numerous times. And the Midwest is the shocker there. Very low birth rates. I don't know if that's from people moving from one place or another. I mean, everyone knows my opinion on the American Community Survey, which comes out in the other 139, I'm told, surveys other than the every 10-year census from the Census Bureau. I mean, data mining, people love, for whatever reason, data mining is, you know, a lot of reasons, right? They say, well, for planning and everything else and blah, 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 got to plan things out and for marketing, everything. I don't know. I don't like to be like a human. It's like human resources. The whole concept of human resources, human being a resource, is offensive. The term is offensive to me. Right? I, a lot of people in human resources know my beloved sister-in-law. Is in human resources. A lot of people, nice, wonderful people in human resources. I just don't like the name of it. You're not a resource. You're a human being. But I digress. Right? As usual, we go off on these tangents, but welcome to Safety Wars. what's my point here? We're being data mined for everything. And it's getting a little bit tiresome. The way it is. And we're going to talk, that's going to be an ongoing theme here. So here's the regional population changes, more exact numbers. Population nearly 132.7 million, growth of 1.4% increase. Added more people than all other regions in the South, Northeast, reversal of a decline. Cities with populations over 50,000 grew by 1%. And the Midwest, growth by 0.7% increase in cities with populations over 50,000. And in West, 1.0% increase. So that's where those numbers come from. Big winners in all this. Princeton, Texas, 30.6% growth rate. Top numeric gainers, New York City. People moving back to New York City, Houston, and Los Angeles. I guess this is before the fires, with that, in that whole area. So, it's very, very frustrating here, with the way things are, with this. People we adopted, I can get, Alex Newman on here, friend of the program. She'll probably do one hell of a long presentation here, but I'll say this. Now, this zero population growth thing, not very well thought out. It really wasn't very well thought out. Why? I don't know. Politics. Everyone wants to be involved in politics here and everything. Now, it sounded good at the time. And it's not a left-wing or right-wing issue on here. Paul Ehrlich back in 1967, I believe it was. When he came out with all this stuff, we got to reduce the population. Then China, we got to reduce the population. Now they're having societal issues there, financial issues, because even with our bond ratings, population figures in on that. The way it is, we may not like it, but this is part of the game. That's the way it is. Let's get back into new. How do you like that song? We were laughing about it on my project here. Here we have another safety issue. This is coming from archive.is, article by Michelle Weiss-Bachmann. Nice German name there. Western governments must tackle the maritime lawlessness and their sanctions help create. One of the many barriers to successful trade trade talks between, and this is a, and who is this for? The writer is a maritime intelligence analyst. I never heard of that, but we'll go with it. A lot of stuff I haven't heard of. One of the many barriers to successful trade talks between Washington and Beijing is China's reliance on Iran and Russia for its oil, the dangerous, unregulated, and illicit fleet of tankers that sail to ports to deliver it. Chinese refineries source about one-third of imported crude oil from Russia and Iran, undermining President Trump's maximum pressure campaign against Iran and defying G7 sanctions against Moscow. The size and scope of illicit shipping practices used by most of the roughly 700 aging anonymously owned tankers and the escalating threat they pose to world maritime safety and environment should not be underestimated. This fleet has tripled in size since Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine in 2022 and now accounts for as much as 18% of all tankers trading internationally. If Trump intends to make good on his threat to punish those buying Iranian oil, he must confront Chinese oil companies, traders, and port authorities that failed to inspect, detain, or prosecute tankers violating international laws or conventions. Adding to the problem, sanctions have no real bite. More than half of tankers shipping Iranian petrochemicals are now under sanctions by Western countries. Well-entrenched workarounds have evolved over the past few years to avoid exposure to the U.S. financial system. While ship owners, traders, and charterers use regulatory arbitrage, an operational subterfuge to move Iranian cargoes. It goes on and on and on. Irrespective of ranking sanctions, these elderly flagless ships and others using substandard flag registries are an oil spill accident waiting to happen. That's how we work it in to the environment, right? 15 years out of the Gulf oil spill year. And, I mean, it's not a good thing here, with this. You know, I don't know what to tell you here with this. Okay. What else we have here? All right. Okay, next story. The best time to brush your teeth. And we're talking about tooth safety here. Best time to brush your teeth, and this is from telegraph.co.uk. The best time to brush your teeth, eat breakfast and set your alarm. And it's not what you think. From drinking coffee to asking for a pay raise, researchers claim there's an optimal window of opportunity to do most things. Yes, absolutely. We've all heard of entrepreneurs and fitness fanatics wake at dawn to work out or hit their desks. Should you do the same? Maybe not. A study by the University of Westminster found that people who woke between 5:22 a.m. and 7:21 a.m. had higher levels of the stress hormone cortisol than those who slept later. I tell you what, during COVID, when we didn't have anything to do for like 3 months, getting up at 8 a.m. every morning was a wonderful thing. Believe me, I never experienced that. They're also more likely to suffer from muscle aches, colds, headaches, and had worse moods, right? So, 7:22 is better, right? Brush your teeth before breakfast. You might have habitually reach for your toothbrush or to scrub away toast crumbs and ensure a clean start to the day. A dentist, Dr. Shahid Manohari, right, says, you could also be scouring away your precious dental enamel. She says that when we eat, the natural bacteria in our mouths produce acid to break down the sugar in the food. So if you brush your teeth, you're rubbing that acid on the tooth, which is a mineral, and it can wear it down. So, okay, great. Eat breakfast before 8 a.m. Eating breakfast after 9 a.m. increases the risk of type 2 diabetes, right, by 59%. Workouts, right, warning for sleep and weight loss. A recent U.S. study has found that for women, morning workouts between 6:30 and 8:30 a.m. reduce abdominal fat and reduce blood sugar. But evening workouts between 6 and 8 p.m. best enhance endurance and build muscle. For men, evening workouts are the most effective to burn fat and reduce blood pressure. Damn it, I'm going down to that gym right after the program. Generally, studies have shown that scheduling morning exercise is going to help you stick to healthy exercise habits, shift your body clock to function earlier in the day, and encourage more movement and enhance weight loss better than evening workouts. Right? So, here you go. Here's another. Make an important decision or ask a favor between 11 a.m. and 12 p.m. Right? Yeah, that's good. With that, again, knowing when to ask for things is important, right? A recent UK study found that regular naps can help preserve reaction time and memory as we age, as well as leaving us feel refreshed and more alert. According to the Sleep Facts Foundation, if your lifestyle allows, naps should be between 10 and 20 minutes long and end before 2 p.m. to avoid interfering with nighttime sleep. All right. Drink coffee. When's the best time to drink coffee? After 9 a.m. and before 2 p.m. Caffeine blocks brain receptors that detect adenosine, a neurotransmitter in the body which helps, which builds up during the day and makes us feel sleepy. However, in the morning, adenosine levels are low and the alerting hormone cortisol is high, so coffee might not give you the lift that you expect. If you want to sleep well, avoid coffee after 2 p.m. as it can take 8 hours or more to be fully metabolized. However, Dr. Stanley, from wherever this is, some people are more sensitive to caffeine than others, so if you sleep perfectly well after late-night espresso, keep drinking it. If you don't know you won't sleep well, don't, right? Eat dinner 7 to 8 p.m. 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eating late around 10 p.m. can increase the risk of waking and the risk of diabetes. Okay. So 7 and 8 p.m. Dr. Stanley says, we need to lose 1 degree of body temperature to fall asleep. Burning calories creates heat so late, a large will warm you up when you should be cooling down. Go to sleep between 10 p.m. and 11 p.m. Right? That's another one. Tips for sticking to a daily routine. We were calling the safety business the skills mode, right? Jens Rasmussen, skills mode. Choose the right habits. Make it easy to follow. Plan it all out and have a backup plan. Make sure you don't forget things and try temptation bundling. What the hell is temptation bundling? Remove the friction involved in getting the different parts of your daily routine done. You know, I'm probably going to, this will probably be a good morning toolbox talk here, right? Oh, what do you think? Yeah, let me save that. Daily routine, right? Temptation bundling, which involves having a rule that you only get to do or have something you enjoy when it comes with the habit you're trying to build, such as listening to a gripping new audiobook only when you hit the gym, right? I don't know. Yeah, we do. You know, hey, that's how I got this size, you know, because you feel, right, well, I had a hard day's work. I should have a good meal, you know, and then what happens? Every day turns into Thanksgiving or Christmas or Easter. St. Louis, here's some more safety stuff. St. Louis tornado sirens didn't sound in deadly storm. Now a city commissioner has been placed on leave. Oh, hold on. We got that. We don't usually use it anymore. Here you go. No, that's wrong. That's an air raid, right? City alarms. Right? St. Louis's emergency management chief has been placed on administrative leave, the city's mayor said, after sirens meant to sound during a tornado warning failed to be activated ahead of Friday's deadly twister. Sarah Russell, commissioner of the City Emergency Management Agency in St. Louis, remained on paid administrative leave as an external investigation proceeds into what went wrong. You know? I mean, they're taking the emergency sirens out of my neighborhood because Oyster Creek is shutting down. There, I tell you what, when we were looking for houses, right, this is actually a true story here. Like all the stories are true. We were looking for houses, and I said, man, there's this gated community, right? And it was in a part of Rockland County. You know, gated community in Rockland County are really nice. Right? And I said, look, it's a gated community, but just out of curiosity, it's got all that we're looking for in the description. Right? Well, everything that you're looking for in the description, but it's like, no, two-thirds of the price that we're willing to pay. And I said, you know what, honey, let's just go and take a look at it. You never know. It may be an eclectic, it may be something that we like, just, you know. So we go up. There we go through the gated community. No, the guard waves us through. Okay, hey, we're here to look at the house. We're just going around and coming right on back. He says, okay, you got 15 minutes. If you're not out, we're coming to get you. I said, okay, no problem. I like what I'm hearing right now. So we go up to the house. We park in the driveway. And we get out and we look. And it's an open house. And we look at that. Now, 15 minutes is a pretty short time to look at a house. But no. Again, you know, a gated community. I go in there and I look. And what do I see? Something. If you were going to make a postcard for Oyster Creek Nuclear Power Plant. Not Oyster Creek. The one up by. I guess it. You were going to. The nuclear plant. This would be like the place. Right? Take a picture of the power plant. It was like phenomenal here. That's not the name of the power. I'm getting the power plants mixed up. Anyway. All right. Now, here we have. Again, we had the attack on Israel today. On Israel. Basically, yeah, it was. There were Israeli diplomats, right? You know, that is an attack, right? When you're a diplomat, you're attacking the country, basically, here. That's why it's a federal crime. Well, the hip-hop artist, formerly known, and this is Forward, Jewish Independent and Nonprofit. The hip-hop artist, and the article is by Mira Fox from May 15th last week. Well, the hip-hop artist, formerly known as Kanye West, went on his first anti-Semitic tirade. Some colleagues opine that we should ignore it. Why give him more gas? Right? It was a different time. Blah, blah, blah. And everything else. Now it seems absurd. In addition to the anti-Semitic social media rants, we now gotten songs and music videos praising Hitler, a Super Bowl ad selling a swastika t-shirt, several appearances in KKK robes. Nothing has died out. It's all gotten on a bigger stage. And yet, in another way, it did die out. Yay, anti-Semitism became old news. Another day, another anti-Semitic conspiratorial rant on X. As the sun rises, so yay tweets, whatever. No, so, what's going on here, right? Here you go. Regardless, people are consuming the song, right? And everything else is, you know, people are watching his videos, they're downloading his songs. That brings in, now this is probably, the conclusion says it all. I cannot argue with Mira Fox. She is correct on this one. That brings in money, and money is what really drives normalization. There's no downside for Ye's rants. They're old news, hardly worth freaking out about. No company or brand is cutting ties with them over anti-Semitism that hasn't already, but there is an upside, profit. When anti-Semitism becomes profitable, we're in trouble. Yeah, that's how it is with all these folks. Whether you're peddling disaster porn, right, with this, no, we've been accused of that. No, we're not. We want people to be prepared. Every September, we talk about disaster preparation. That's what we do here. We've done it from the beginning. We've done it as a person for over 10 years, 15 years, something like that. We talk about disasters. Why? I'm going to say this again. Said it for many years. We are not prepared to manage major disasters in this country. We are stressed out. The system is stressed. Handling regional disasters and local disasters. Anything major, we ain't got it, man. Stay tuned for our programs in September. I tell you what, the people up in Finland like my programs in September. I tell you, I'll say that much. Well, what do you mean, Jim? Well, Finland is pushing disaster preparation because of a nuclear threat from Russia. And I tell you what, I got the biggest growth was in November and December last year. I had thousands and thousands of downloads on all the platforms from Finland. I was like, wow. But anyway, here we have Trump's Mar-a-Lago and Bedminster clubs are taking in more money than ever. President has raised entry fees on many of his resorts, which attract donors seeking to influence White House policy. I don't think the president has anything to do with it. I think it's his staff that does that because, you know, they're really not supposed to be running a business if you're president. Donald Trump's private clubs have emerged as a money-making venture for the president's second term and a hub for donors and favor seekers alike. It now costs a record $1 million to join Mar-a-Lago. Trump's Florida resort, according to people familiar with the fees, up by about from $500,000 in his first term. The initiation fee at Trump's golf club in Bedminster rose to 125 Gs, surging from $75,000 in recent years, the person close to the club said. Another Trump golf club in Florida near Mar-a-Lago now charges $300,000 to join. I tell you what, every president goes through this. Right? The other thing, reason why you would do it, right? You would say, well, that's horrible. They're charging more money. The other thing is, you try to pretty much weed everybody out here. What do you mean, Jim? You weed people out? Only serious people are going to be there, right? Unfortunately, in this case, it'll be the rich. You're not letting in, you know, the regular Joe six-pack here. But people weed things out all the time using different techniques. Prices are one of them. How many classes do you take where you have, they want an exclusive class, right? You want an exclusive class, and what happens? Well, the price of that class is $5,000 because they're looking for one kind of person to be there, right? With that. Now, here you go. Here, and now this is pretty funny here, and this is from ABC News. But my father always used to tell a joke. This is one of my father's favorite joke. Yesterday, I couldn't spell supervisor. Today, I am one. Right? Well, this is actually what happened here, sort of. New head of Social Security hired from Wall Street. Tell staff he had to Google the job when he was offered it. ABC News obtained audio of Frank Bisignano's staff meeting with managers. The newly sworn-in head of the Social Security Administration told agency staff this week that when he was first offered a job in Trump's administration, he wasn't familiar with the position and had to look it up. Frank Bisignano, a former Wall Street executive, said during a town hall with Social Security managers from around the country on Wednesday that he wasn't seeking a position in the Trump administration when he received a call about leading the SSA. So I got a phone call, and it's about Social Security, and I'm really not. I swear I'm not looking for a job, he said. And I'm like, well, what am I going to do? So I'm Googling Social Security, one of my great many skills, one of the great Googlers on the East Coast. I'm like, what the heck is the Commissioner of Social Security? Right? And, it's a laugh over it, right? And we already covered that one. Okay, and this is all on the budget. So, the EPA. All right, let's get some EPA news for the final couple minutes of the program here. A couple, it's like 10. EPA, and you know what? We could share the screen here. Hold on. Let's share the screen. EPA completes expedited cost recovery for cleanup work done associated with a spill near I-435 in Lena, Kansas. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has announced an expedited cost recovery agreement with Concrete Strategies to recover for over $30,000 for cleanup work performed by EPA's Region 7 Superfund program relating to a spill in 2023. What does this about? EPA's Region 7's Emergency Response Program dispatched an on-scene coordinator quickly after learning about the release from a report to our spill line. The actions taken by a responder and the responsible party led to a quick cleanup and reduced costs for all parties involved. EPA Region 7 responded to a report of white liquid with a strong chemical odor impacting a stormwater drain downstream retention ponds near I-435 in Lenexa, Kansas. I know people who were on this spill. The chemical composition of the white liquid was determined to include hazardous substances, as defined by CERCLA, known as Superfund. Cleanup actions included recovering white non-aqueous phase liquid, That means stuff that floats, right? Pumping and filtration, surface skimming, particulate stock filtration, remove solids. Right. Read the settlement agreement between the EPA and Concrete Strategies. All right. So what are they saying here? Going through. And here, right? So they asked for $33,000. All right, the EPA issued a demand for an issue for payment of $33,425.79 for the full amount of the response costs incurred by the EPA at or in connection with the removal action. Okay, great. So they got it with that. I tell you what, they got away cheap, right? They got away cheap on that one. I tell you, just for health and safety oversight, you're looking at 5 G's for that. City of Grandview, Idaho, clean water infrastructure project wins EPA award for innovation, backed by the Idaho DEQ funding. Idaho's Department of Environmental Quality Clean Water State Revolving Fund program provides low-interest loans for drinking water infrastructure projects. And this is from today. The City of Grandview, Idaho received a Waters Award from the US EPA in recognition of innovative and effective use of their Idaho Clean Water State Revolving Fund loan. Right? Like many cities, Grandview faces the compounding issues of aging infrastructure and a growing population. Well, not so much, according to our previous story. The wastewater treatment system improvements funded by the loan will increase the plant's energy efficiency as well as make the system more resilient and safer, right? So capacity and resilience equals safety. The project will include a total containment lagoon, relining and optimizing treatment cells, and dike and flood resiliency improvements, collection system lift main improvements. Since the loan is low interest, it will save significant finance charges over the life of the loan. Okay, good for them. Okay, I got to be watching for time here. EPA kickstarts Maine's lead paint initiative. As part of a long-standing effort to address risks of lead paint across New England, the US EPA will begin an initiative in Maine involving outreach, education, compliance assistance, and enforcement activities. EPA will focus on areas located in central Maine along the I-95 corridor, including Androscoggin, Cumberland, Kennebec, all right, Penobscot, and Waldo counties. These areas were selected in part due to the number of children with elevated blood lead levels, as reported by Maine Center for Disease Control and Prevention. This initiative will help increase awareness and compliance with federal lead-based paint rules. So the federal government historically has been a concern with lead-based paint in children, basically between the ages of 6 months and 6 years. Why? Because that's when they're crawling around on the floor the most. The way it is. So that's been their focus there. And, hopefully, again, not something to mess around with, lead. EPA's New England Lead Paint Initiative is about protecting children where they live, learn, and play while reducing their lead exposure in homes, said EPA New England Regional Administrator Mark Sanborn. Every family should feel safe from environmental hazards in their communities by working closely with our local counterparts. This is a clear example of how the EPA is protecting the public health and Americans of Americans and their families, right? So we're going to go one more time. We're going to go to commercial break here, and we'll come back and we'll finish up our program. So let's do this here.
Safety Wars is streaming now.
SafetyFM.com.
In an unpredictable world, one voice rises above the chaos. Meet Jim Polzo, a seasoned safety expert who's navigated through some of the most dangerous scenarios, from anthrax, explosive cleanups, disasters, and numerous environmental cleanups, and lived to tell the tale. Now he's bringing his wealth of knowledge, insights, and experiences to you through Safety Wars. From workplace hazards to the hidden dangers in your own home, Jim covers it all with his engaging storytelling. Safety Wars isn't just a podcast. It's your guide to a safer world. Join Jim Polzo and become part of the Safety Wars revolution. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos. Safety Wars. Your safety is our mission.
Yeah, that's all we got for tonight. And I hope to, if I don't see you, have a great weekend. This is the holiday weekend in the United States, our first major one of the summer. It's usually, this one kicks off the summer. It's Memorial Day. So, go out, have a ball out there. And we'll see you back here next week, no matter what, with everything. So, that's what we got here. So, boom, boom, boom. Let's see here. And we will see you back. We will see you back on next week. So take care, everybody.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.